You're listening to Australia's fastest growing podcast network. This is the Lifestyle Pod Network. You're listening to The Dream Show with Jane Theresa Anderson.
Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson, and this is episode 151. And we have a guest on the show today, and the guest is Carmen. And as you know, what we do on The Dream Show when we have a guest, which is most of the episodes, is that the guest gets in contact and says, I'd love to be on the show. I've got a dream that I'd like to talk to you about, and you can interpret it and everyone can listen in. And so we arrange the date, we do the call as we've just done. And the thing that I don't know is I don't know anything about the dream until we start the recording process. So we've just done that. We've just finished. And here I am adding the bit at the beginning and the bit at the end of a show. So I can tell you now that Carmen's dream involves a lot of animals, is in a lot of emotions, a lot of emotional stuff, a lot of plays on words. And as you will hear, she is actually a poet. So that's very interesting. And Carmen certainly relates to the dream, and you'll hear her explanations about what's going on in her life and her dilemmas and her excitements and her emotions and her feelings. So I think you're really going to really enjoy this one. I'm not going to say too much because it's a good, deep, long listen. It's going to be very, very rewarding for you. So all I'm going to say before going in is just give the website addresses as usual. If you've never been to my websites before, go along and have a look. There's a lot of free resources there, and also, of course, contact details about how you can get in contact with me to book a consultation or a series of consultations or train to become an analyst or all sorts of other dream-related things, as well as, of course, books and ebooks. So the website address is www.dream.net.au, or my blog is janetheresa.com, that's Theresa without an H, or the shop, the dream store, is janetheresaanderson.com. Of course, you can get to the dream store from the blog or from the website, or you can find me on Facebook. And you can also listen back to all 151 episodes of The Dream Show if you go to the blog and just click podcasts. So I think that's enough. Let's just go straight into the call with Carmen. Here you go. Welcome to The Dream Show, Carmen.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
It's lovely to have you on the show. What prompted you to put your hand up and volunteer to be a guest?
Well, I write a lot of poetry, and I use a lot of dreams in my poetry, and I don't do it in any sort of new age way or any way that I think is a magical sort of undertaking. And I thought I really need to read something or be in touch with someone who looks at dreams in a very practical way, because I suppose sometimes I can't believe that people sort of disregard their dreams as something that's not real, because we all dream. Mm. So I went searching for something on the internet, and I found your website, and I love it. So just really looking forward to talking about a dream, because metaphors and symbols are to me so obviously helpful for understanding your life.
Thank you. That's really lovely. And yeah, so much of dream work is looking at the metaphors and drawing the parallels between the metaphor and the dream, mm-hmm. and the kind of metaphor in life or the analogy in life, yeah. And starting then. And it's funny, you know, Carmen, just before we go into your dream, mm-hmm. I find with a lot of people that consult me that there are some people that just flow with that very easily. Mm-hmm. And there are other people that really find it that quite a challenge to move from the sort of left brain literal approach to dreams into that more metaphorical, yeah. holistic approach. So I know there'll be people of both kinds listening in, and everybody in between. So I'm really looking forward to doing this one. So as usual, of course, I have no idea what any guest dream is. So I'm here with my pencil poised and go with your dream. Oh, when did you have your dream first?
I had it on last Saturday morning, And so it's about 5 days ago. But I chose this dream because I had a very strong emotional reaction to
it. Good.
And I still do. I still do.
Great. Fantastic. Hit us with it.
Okay. Well, I discovered that I have this terrible neighbour who lives in this shanty sort of womble house down near my chook run. So at the start of the dream, I actually don't think he's terrible. He's down near the hen house. I've actually got in real life. I've got five chickens down there. And in real life, at the start of February, we had a python come out of the roof, and it came through a little gap in the ceiling near the fireplace flue. And in the dream, I'm thinking to myself, gee, it's good that nothing like that has happened again. I'm really starting to settle down. It's a relief not to have these frightening creatures coming into my house. So I'm thinking that, and then I walk into a room and there's an enormous lizard on the ceiling. And I just go, oh, great. Now, I'm not terrified by the lizard. It's a sense of, oh, this is happening again. It's back. And from real life, I think, you know what the snake catcher said? It's okay if it's in a room that has a door, because just close the door, call the snake catcher, and it's easier for them to deal with it and come and catch it when it's in a contained space. So don't panic. It's actually a good thing rather than it running around the entire house.
Yeah.
So I think, good, okay, go into another room. There's another enormous lizard. It's sort of like it's like a black shiny lizard with some red spots. It's not a real type of lizard. It's a completely fantastical lizard and quite beautiful. But I just went, oh goodness, this one's even bigger. Close that door as well. And so it's after that I find out there's this man living in this womble hut down near the chook run. With him, he has a girlfriend and she's very, very weak. Now, he's sort of got a blondish beard. He's mid-30s, getting towards 40. He's a bit fat. He's very sweaty. And he's just very calm and a bit dumb. Now, his girlfriend is sort of like the female equivalent of him, but she's very weak. And I sort of feel like I want to help her, but nothing has happened yet. Anyway, so then I'm with that couple and two other women, and one of the extra women is my sister Louise, who I get along with really well. She's 10 years older than me, and we hang around together quite a lot. The other woman she's not from real life, and she's very mouthy but very likable. And so we all get in this guy's Jeep, and we're going to drive into the next town together. And as we get in the car, the man says something, and I didn't really hear what he said, but the really mouthy woman says, oh, great, look, you know, don't talk like that. I know that you're having a dig at your girlfriend, and you can't sort of make fun of her like that in front of us. I know that you were saying, you know, she's fat, so just cut it out in front of us, okay? You've got guests. And I thought, wow, I didn't really catch what he said, but I'm really glad that this other woman stood up for the girlfriend. And so we all get in this Jeep, We're actually quite happy to be going somewhere together with new people. There's a sense of excitement. We're driving along and the Jeep is very poorly maintained. The seats are sort of rattling and aren't bolted down properly. And we get into town and then I think the other women go off into some shops. So we're standing in the road in this town and it's quite muddy and I don't recognise this town from real life at all. But just the way it was, it could have actually been in front of the hen house again. It had the same feeling, like this muddy sort of, you know, chicken coop sort of feeling. And we're in this town and I'm with the guy and I start talking to him and I realise he actually keeps some animals. And one of them is a cart horse.
A cart horse?
Yeah. Cart horse, yeah. So a workhorse and it's a white one. And it has had some rainbow paint sort of painted on it here and there. Sometimes I've seen at fates and things, you know, people may paint the fur of a white horse. Mm. And, you know, it occurs to me that maybe the woman did it. Anyway, he treats the animals badly. But all the time through all of this, he's very calm. I regard him as a bit stupid. And none of the cruel things he's doing are explicit. Like you'd be very hard pressed to call him out on it without sounding like you're being over vigilant.
Mm.
And so that's why I sort of admired this other louder woman, because I thought, wow, that's really good that she sort of called this guy out on behalf of the girlfriend, because I thought, wow, that girlfriend probably doesn't think that anything concrete has happened that she can get mad about.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway, so this cart horse is there, and then I realise that he has made the cart horse drag the cart around without wheels on. And to make it even sicker, he, for some sort of weird little punishment that he makes absolutely no fuss about, he has made the cart horse carry the heavy axle from the cart in its mouth.
Oof.
And this is when I start to get really angry, and I'm like, why are these unreasonable things happening? It doesn't matter if you're a calm person. It doesn't matter if you're sort of stupid. You're being cruel.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so the end of the dream comes up and everybody gets back in the Jeep and we're going to go back home. But then suddenly I'm outside of the Jeep. I'm on the muddy road. I'm still concerned about this horse. I didn't get a straight answer from this guy and we didn't rescue the horse. And the Jeep goes off the road into a creek. Nobody is killed, but everybody gets out of the Jeep, sopping wet, staggering back up onto the road. And I see my sister Louise wiping the water out of her eyes and just trying to get orientated again. And that's when I start to get very, even more angry, because I'm protective of my sister.
Yeah.
And it becomes clear that this guy is getting the Jeep out of the creek and is just going to go on as before. He's not going to get the Jeep repaired. He's not going to get anything fixed.
Mm.
And I'm standing there in the road going, don't get back in the car with him. You know, this is going to go on. It's going to go on and on and on. And so, yeah, I woke up extremely angry. But there was also, you know, the sense that I was outside of the Jeep because I hadn't sorted out what happened to the cart horse yet.
Right, yes. Yep. So you were outside the Jeep because you hadn't sorted out what had happened to the cart horse. Otherwise, you would have been in the Jeep?
I think that just the realisation through what was happening to the horse, even though I had been in the Jeep, something, you know, in that wonderful dreamlike way, it's like, well, you weren't, you didn't resolve what was back there, so we'll pop you out of the car. You're not in that car anymore. And I watched the Jeep crash. So I didn't go into the creek with everyone else.
That's wonderful, if you know what I mean.
I know. Yeah.
Well, so that's great. Great dream. Mm. Fantastic. I'm going to ask a few little questions around it first, Carmen. Mm. And the anger you felt at the end of the dream, was that a kind of level of anger that you and everyone else might feel in waking life, or was it over-the-top anger?
No, it was a waking life type of anger, because I didn't run after the car. I didn't actually even call out or anything. Mm. It was this sense of... I do get angry like that sometimes when people put up with too much.
Yeah.
You know, and when they are being drained by other people. So, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it was a kind of anger that you can recognise from waking life. I ask because often when people have a dream that upsets them and has a lot of anger in it, they're often upset because the anger that they experienced in the dream was so huge, and they're like, oh my God, am I the kind of person that could be angry like that? I'm so devastated. And that's usually when the person normally holds back a lot of anger, and it's really come up in a dream huge. So yours is more a sense of realization of an emotion, even though it upset you for quite a while afterwards.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Just a couple of probably odd questions. A Jeep. Have you got any particular associations with a Jeep as a vehicle?
No, I mean, I don't own one. Nobody I know owns one. I like them, and all I can think about, a specific reference to a Jeep is that, somebody I know mentioned how much he hated the Jeep ad. There's a Jeep ad on at the moment where, a woman, you know, a very sort of, upper middle class woman comes home to a perfect house and her husband's there, and she says, I bought a Jeep, like that, and my friend can't handle this ad because of it being completely, you know, just a very, very, it's trying to relate to a female demographic, but it's completely unrealistic that you'd just come home and tell your partner that you'd spent that much money. So that's the only thing that I can sort of remember. But, yeah, I quite like Jeeps.
So you quite like Jeeps, but the feeling may be that it may represent something unrealistic that you just don't do, or you don't go and get without... Yeah. Going through more reasonable approaches.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. I know you've got the basis of the dream here because you've already mentioned, you know, that particularly by the time you get to the end of the dream, that there's an issue here about how much to speak out and how much not to speak out about issues that you're protective about. So I know you've got that, and I know we've kind of all got that a little bit, but we're going to go into that and a lot more, much more deeply. For our international listeners, at the beginning when Carmen mentioned the chook run, when she's later talking about chickens, same thing in Australia, they're called chooks. So I'm just letting everybody know that. Or hens or chickens. Or whatever. And yes, we do live in a country where you can get pythons in the roof of your house, in the ceiling.
Yeah, and that's the first time anything like that happened to me. I've gone through my entire life without encountering a snake. And
of any kind?
Pardon?
A snake of any kind?
Yeah, as in, I've never been confronted, like in the garden or anything, by actually meeting a snake. I've seen, you know, the odd deceased snake, you know, in trees and things like that, but I've never had a python come out of the ceiling. That was quite an extraordinary thing. Yeah. And it was a big one.
Yeah. Okay, we could go down the track, but we're probably not, but it might be good to bear it in mind. We could go down the track that sometimes when extraordinary things happen while we're awake in our waking life, they can also reflect what's going on for us unconsciously in a kind of way we can kind of call them up, or we respond to them in ways which reflect how we're, you know, how we're doing deep down inside. So as we go through this interpretation and talk about your dream karma, and you might also like to think, what was going on for me in February when just prior to having this python in the ceiling situation?
Yeah.
You know, what came out of the blue at me? How did I handle it? Just one clarification question. You started off by saying, oh, I had this terrible neighbor in the kind of womble shanty house at the bottom of the garden. Mm. And then you were talking about how you were thinking, oh, it's good that I haven't had anything like the python or any frightening creatures. And then later on you said, that's where the man in the womble hut came in. So just clarify for me, was he at the beginning of the dream or not?
No, I think that I had the lizards before I met him.
The man, okay, that's great.
It seemed to be like, okay, I've got all this stuff happening in the house, and then I walk down to the bottom of the garden, and lo and behold, I've got an unwanted neighbour.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes, I'm glad it's that way around. That makes even more sense of it. So in a sense, if you look back, the dream opens with that feeling of you pondering, phew,
yeah.
Oh, I'm glad I don't have anything nasty happening in my life.
Yeah.
I've got over that. And not only that, but I know how to deal with something if it comes up. I don't panic. I just contain the situation. I close the door. I bring in help. So the dream opens with that pondering. And quite often, the first part of the dream, if you remember the first part, quite often that represents the situation that the entire dream then goes on to explore. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of quite good to just kind of try to get that tight, the beginning. And also the dream always reflects your experiences of the last one or two days, conscious and unconscious. So there's that feeling that 5 days ago when you had this dream, and as you were falling asleep, for whatever reason, you were contemplating that, phew, thank goodness, you know. In other words, any fears that you might have had or any situations which might occasionally panic you, you feel that you've got a hold on all that now. That's good.
Yeah.
And there's nothing frightening. And if anything, the python situation in waking life actually taught you metaphorically that if anything comes up that you panic, just contain it, step away, take a deep breath, get help. So that's kind of like the beginning of the dream.
Yeah.
So you probably got to that point, which was really nice as you fell asleep. However, that was where you were consciously, and your unconscious mind went, panic? No. I know you understand that, but hey, you haven't listened to all of us down here. No, there's more going on.
There's more happening, yeah. And also, if you panic, you know, you can end up affecting the thing that is frightening you, whether it's an animal or a person. If you panic, you can actually make the situation worse. If it's an animal, it may bite you. If it's a person, they'll get offended, all that sort of thing as well. So keeping calm, it seems, even though it's hard sometimes, you've got to do it.
So you're so spot on, and it's lovely that your dream brought up, first of all, the animals and then a man to kind of work through that stuff. You know, that animals of all creatures smell fear. So they certainly smell panic. And in a sense, you know, again, metaphorically, if we feel ourselves begin to fear and feel ourselves begin to panic, we awaken or bring out of hibernation all our instincts that may not work in our best interest. You know, you could look at the animals in the dream on one point of view is our instincts to bite or whatever. So, but it's interesting already that you, as you mentioned there, that what you, at the beginning of this dream, or you've got this feeling of, rather than panic, one should remain calm, otherwise you can cause offence. That's what you just said. And of course, running through the dream, we've got this sense of the question of what causes offence. You know, later on in the dream, the man is stupid. And doesn't realize that he's causing offense, or he gets away with it by looking stupid, but he is also calm. So already you've got someone in the dream later on that appears calm or is calm, but actually causes offense, which is different to what you just said. What you just said is and we would all agree with you in a conscious state of mind. If you feel a panic coming up, stay calm because you're in danger of in panicking, causing offence. And we're all going, yeah, of course, absolutely, you're so right there. Like, take a deep breath and think about it. But your unconscious mind goes on to actually put the two together. Ooh, but hang on a minute. let's just illustrate this with this womble man, this idiot, this stupid. He's calm, but he causes offence.
Yeah, so, because I can't work out whether he is stupid or whether he's faking. And I think your calm could mean either thing, and I don't trust you because what you're doing is wrong.
That's right. So we don't know until we go into the dream, but as you've suggested there, what we want to do is one of the things we want to do through the eyes of your dream is to look at what calm means to your unconscious mind. So consciously, calm is a sensible step to take. Yeah. Unconsciously, you don't necessarily trust calm. You think it can be manipulative, a way to cause offence. So, you know, even as I'm speaking to you just now, Carmen, if you look back like to your earliest childhood memories or your parents or guardians that brought you up, is there something that you're thinking now about someone that was calm, but it was kind of a bit not to be trusted?
No, I wasn't sort of thinking about my childhood. I was thinking about more recently, because I mean recently in the last 10 years or so, certainly being in university or being around corporations and that type of thing, you're not supposed to, in professional situations, you do not explode. But this gives rise to a lot of grey areas where somebody is very manipulative, but you know, they can get, they know that the show's over if they yell or if they completely lay the cards on the table and get angry, whereas you know, you must operate in the world of calm all the time if you're going to be professional. And so that's what it sort of needs to be. But, when I was a child, we used to get really angry. And, you know, we're a family that gets along really well together. We're all extremely close friends. And I'm the youngest of five children, so it's a big family. But we're all sort of spaced out. I'm the youngest. And so it was a house of children, you know, when I was growing up, and so we were very loud, and we did not sort of stop ourselves from voicing and getting angry and all that type of thing. As I've got older, I've realised, you know, you don't, I don't yell at people, but I'm also, I'm not like a flat, emotionless person either. I just try and express myself, but I don't want to sort of go the other way and muddy what I'm trying to say by screaming. I try not to be manipulative calm because I can sort of, I don't like it.
That makes a lot of sense. And I love the word there that you used, the word muddy, and you said, I don't like to muddy things. And we've got those muddy roads later to look at, so that may come in there. So thank you for that. So there's quite a lot even at that, even before we get into the dream, Carmen. As a child, you had a wonderful childhood, loud. You could be angry. There was no judgment for that. You could, you know, totally explore your emotions, which must make for wonderful work as a poet as well, to be able to get into all of that. And so I wonder, even on that level, to be able to have such freedom to express yourself in those ways, and perhaps there was never really anyone going about being rationally calm, then, you know, sometimes we can distrust the opposite unconsciously. Oh, well, look, our family is joyful and totally expressive and loud, and we're free to say anything. So if you're over in the opposite corner being calm, maybe you're hiding something. What's wrong with you? Why can't you shout out? Why can't you just say how you feel?
And then
you get to university, and I relate to what you're saying, and I'm sure anyone that's worked in the corporate field or been through university knows this culture.
I mean, it really works on some levels. It's good that you know you can go to work and nobody's going to very explicitly bring their expressive problem to the way that you interact in a meeting. But on the downside, if you need for somebody to be honest about a problem, and they don't want to be, you know, you've got nothing to sort of point at and go, you know, this way that we're acting is not working.
Yes, that's right. Yep. And there's the potential for manipulation, as you say in there as well. Mm-hmm. And I reiterate as well, as a poet, the end result, I mean, I know that you've been through university and everything, so part of your poetry is an academic approach to it as well, is in a sense of an arts approach. But then at the bottom line of doing poetry is also totally expressive, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
And so that must sometimes be at odds with the culture in which you are learning and talking about the poetry.
Yes, it is. It is. I'm very lucky in that coming to the sort of the end of my PhD now, I'm in a setting that I have done a lot of work to get a working week that is not interrupted in a way that I suppose I would have been interrupted by very practical academic things when I was doing my master's. So I've learned to be able to carve out a very personal creative space for myself so that I'm getting, you know, poetry that I think is good and is honest.
Yes.
So, yeah. That's but really... it's been a journey because you do feel... breached at the beginning, and you feel like, well, if I can't use my talents and I have to constantly be monitored, how am I supposed to produce something good? So, yeah, it's definitely changed.
And although we will go into some of the dream, but of course all this is totally about the dream as well, you said you were towards the end of your PhD now, so is there also a sense of, will I be able to move forward in an unmonitored way?
It's more like I'm ready. I'm absolutely ready to go on to the next thing. I know that I can take my particular practice, and if the practice changes, I am comfortable with that. So I suppose it's more, I've got to a point where I have a mature understanding of how I work creatively, and I'm more than ready to leave academia behind once I've completed this thing. So rather than being unsure of, oh, what will happen to me when I'm not in university anymore, it's more like, slow down. You want to finish and complete this PhD in a timely, complete manner, not in a rushed manner, but don't speed up too much just because you're confident about the future. Make sure you complete this well. Otherwise, I feel like I could get entangled in rules as I try to leave if I don't complete things as they should be. So I'm just trying to really, you know, honour my own creative self, but be aware of the structures I'm working in, and finish things in a way that the ends are tied up very neatly and people are happy. So,
that makes sense. So and that sounds very, very, a very valid approach. And in a sense, that will be calling up from your unconscious anything that feels not as has got contradictory opinions. Yes. At the end of the dream, for example, you're concerned that the guy will go on in the Jeep just as before. He won't fix it. Nothing will happen. So, and again, there's that sense there, paralleling what you say of the thing is, if I'm calm, in a sense, if I'm calm and measured, I know what I want, I can go on and achieve what I want. But if I've just got to do it slowly and finish the correct processes, and then I'm on the road, so to speak. Yeah. At the end of the dream, there's a sense of, there's anger and the Jeep is on the road with the calm person, but it hasn't been fixed properly. It's just going on as before. Mm. So there is a question there unconsciously of, yes, but will you get it on the road, or will there be aspects of yourself that are maybe a little over calm instead of getting into the emotions that you need to get into, that, yeah, you know, things that need to be fixed. But I just want to go into the actual dream itself. And I did smile when you mentioned there that, you know, during your academic study, it's been a bit like being monitored. Yeah. And where I'd written down lizard, I wrote monitor lizard, ?
Oh, wow, of course. Yes, that's good. Yeah,
we never know, but I like to mention them. As you look at your dream, and I think, you know, what we've been talking about is the theme of your dream. But as we look at the dream, it's really lovely that it starts with that thought of, we're just getting a bit of echo, so I just want to make sure you can still hear me, Carmen.
Yes, I can still hear. Yes.
Okay, that's good. So the beginning of the dream starts with this question of, oh, I've got everything under control. Everything's fine. As long as I stay calm, don't panic, stay contained, can always get help. I'm going to finish the PhD and get on the road.
Yeah.
And then in that sense in the dream, you're thinking about the python, you know, great big snake, very scary. The next thing you happen to see is that there is still something frightening there, but it's a lizard. It's still frightening, but a lizard is not as frightening as a snake. So it's a little bit more maybe handleable, and it's like, oh no, this is happening again, it's back. So there's a sense of, at the time you had this dream, the sense of, I know how to handle what I'm fearful of, I know how to not panic, I know how to stay calm, I know how to stay contained, but I haven't completely got on top of it yet because there's the lizard. I've got a bit on top of it. It's not a snake, it's better than that, but it's still something scary that I'm dealing with here.
Yeah.
And it's a monitor lizard, so it might be about, the scary thing might be about how I'm being monitored, or I have to monitor myself instead of really going in perhaps less calm way and just doing what I want to do. Mm. And then you go into another room, and there's another lizard. Now this time it's still frightening, but it's a bit lighter. It's like it's getting better. This fear is getting better, and the reason that it feels to me that it's getting better is because you describe it then. It's black, it's shiny, it's got red spots. You said it's fantastical and beautiful. So even though you close the door, and even like it's, oh, I'm not sure about this, it has moved from something totally scary to something fantastical and beautiful. Even when we're really frightened of things, we can still sometimes notice the beauty in them as a kind of awesome, full of awe. My God, that's scary, but isn't that beautiful?
Yes.
But there's also that sense there that you're beginning to move into the fantastical or the magical, less rational side, perhaps the poetical side, I don't know, of dealing with a fear. So you start off with, this is the rational approach to fear, don't panic, otherwise you're going to say something you don't mean to say and offend people. And you're now moved into the, I don't know, maybe I can handle the sort of more fantastical, beautiful, maybe if I work in imagery, I can perhaps say things without offending, but still get my message across. I don't know, you close the door on it in the dream, but it's a thought.
And then
the next living creature that you encounter is the man. So it's like we've gone, the fear has been represented as python. That's got a bit better. It's the lizard. That's got a bit better. It's been the magical lizard. Now it's a man. So it's getting closer to human form, something we can recognize. You're kind of like working on it, getting clearer, getting better. But even that man, you don't completely describe him as human. You describe him as living in a womble hut.
I can't remember ever looking him straight in the eye, you know, he's just constantly vague. And looking away and just, you know, doing stuff, without, you know, there's no sense of responsibility about him at all.
So everyone and everything in the dream represents something about us in terms of some of our beliefs about the world, conscious or unconscious. Mm-hmm. So this is not to say that you're vague and irresponsible, but this is to say that unconsciously you have feelings or beliefs about what it is to be vague or irresponsible. And in this dream, you see him and his girlfriend as weak. So there's a feeling of you unconsciously at least think that being irresponsible and vague is a weakness. That needs to be protected, as it turns out in the dream.
Yeah, I had this sense that, okay, you know, this guy is stupid, but he's getting his way because he has somebody with him who is very weak, and he probably would not have any power in a different context, but because of the context that he's in and the relationship he's in with somebody who is just like him, but very, very weak, and she's not willing to speak up for herself at all, then he actually has a lot of power over her. Yeah.
So for you, you know, from what you've said, as a child, you were able to express exactly what you wanted to express.
Well, it wasn't approved of or anything like that, but nothing would have stopped me. And yeah. I was a very angry child sometimes. I think anger was one of my key emotions, and it wasn't upsetting to be angry. It was, you know, let's get to the bottom of this, or this is not right. And so I was never backwards in saying that something was wrong when I was a child, ever. I was just born that way. I came out not complaining, but saying no, you know.
Seeing being able to say strong as a strength.
Yeah.
As a strong person. Yeah. Mm. So in the dream, you've got this kind of opposite, this womble man, and particularly his girlfriend, who is weak and she can't speak out, kind of like the exact opposite to how you saw yourself being born. And she is similar to him in that she is calm. So there's a sense again here of the dream going, your unconscious mind going, yes, but calm is weak. Rationally, calm is strong, but unconsciously, yeah, but calm is weak. You don't get to stand up for yourself. It can be abused.
Yes.
So that's the big issue you're dealing with in the dream. And you say you want to help her. Like, I want to resolve this. I want to get a sense of balance in here between, the totally emotional in a sense and the wonderful strengths around that, but also how to be calm when you want to be calm without being a positive, without it implying weakness or implying any degree of manipulativeness or not being able to get on with what you want to do. Now, you then have the dream figure, the wonderful dream figure of the mouthy, likable woman. So yes, that's great. Yes. That's kind of like a bit like you, I guess, as well. Like, maybe, she'll speak out. She's fine. She'll look after you.
She seemed to have a way that I just went, wow, if I would have spoken out like that, I would have thought that he could not understand me because that's not the level he works on. But she didn't care. She just said it. And so I was like, that's good. It's good that you said it, because even if he doesn't understand, we understand. So
that's right. Yeah. So sometimes it's good just to know where you're coming from and to express that regardless of whether the message gets across to anyone else. How would you say that Louise was different from that, or the same or different?
Louise is a person who is concerned with security. She's always trying to do things in a way that she'll have a foundation in life. She can move forward if people try and say that there are certain requirements of the way she goes about things. She follows the rules. And but at the same time, I don't think she gets, she wouldn't get embroiled in a stranger's problems. So she does have a lot of sort of boundaries in place. It's not to say that she doesn't get stressed or that she doesn't have worries or anything, but I became so protective of her at the end of the dream, because I thought, gee, she thought she'd done everything right and she still ended up in the creek.
That's right. Although one little positive, she was, when she came out of the creek, she was trying to get orientated, but yes, and your last thought was that a Jeep may go on and won't be fixed. And one way that you did describe that the Jeep was kind of up, don't think I actually wrote it down, but it wasn't a very secure vehicle. I think you said the seats weren't bolted down.
Yeah.
So again, you've got that feeling at the end of the dream. Therefore, given that it's Louise's situation that really angers you at the end, is security versus. Are you still secure after all the stuff you've put in, Louise? Versus this Jeep may go on still without secure seats, still not really fixed with the seats not bolted down. So this feeling of, is my Carmen's journey moving forward from here? I'm looking at issues of security and, how will it be if I haven't got secure things in place to enable me to go forward in the way that I want to go forward? So even though those are your sister's issues, some of that's impinging on you.
Yeah.
and you're protective of that. But I love, so we've got the speaking out. We know that part of yourself is alive and well and perhaps would like to speak out even more. And hey, poetry is a good vehicle for that. That's all good. But we've then got the bit about the cart horse. And once again, I love that you bring in the magical elements around the cart horse, you know, the rainbow paint, which you say it's a bit like fates.
He
starts off to be, and a cart horse, of course, is a workhorse. And you've just talked about Louise putting in an awful lot of work for her security. And you've put in an awful lot of good academic work to get you to where you are as well. Just draw that, you know. But although the cart horse at first, and so we're now evolving this animal has gone from, in a sense, snake to lizard to magical lizard to Womble Man to cart horse. So we've kind of gone from Womble Man to cart horse here, continuing the theme. And although this cart horse appears magical and appears beautifully coloured, you know, every colour of the rainbow, it turns out that he's been treated badly.
Yeah, incredible sense of sadness I got off this horse. It's just, I just couldn't understand, and I knew that there was no way to understand the choice to punish this horse because, you know, a horse is not something with a personality that, you know, will come and betray you or anything like that. And it's like, why are you punishing this poor horse? And the man did not even indicate that anything had gone wrong. It was like just a process that he had. It was a process of punishment. And he didn't seek to explain it or anything. It was like, this is something I do and it has to carry the axle around.
Would you say that although you're really happy with the academic work you've done, et cetera, would you say that it's been a punishing routine for you in terms of hard work?
Yeah, I think that sometimes it doesn't make sense to me. It's because when you cross creative things with academic things, you're at an intersection where only a few people can understand what the actual task is that is being asked of you. And so as soon as you wander into straight creative, you'll get asked about the structure. And as soon as you wander into the structural side, you'll get reminded that you haven't got your eye on the creative side. So it can be very confusing if you don't put down your own boundaries and say, okay, I'm not going to worry about that today. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to talk about it when I get the opportunity. But it's something that stops a lot of creative writers from doing something honest with their project because they've constantly got an eye on what's the requirements. Oh, that's right. They haven't got clear requirements. Oh, what do I do now? So
yes.
It's a confusing place, yeah.
You paint a really good picture of that. So in a sense, it's not a big leap to say that at the point of time when you had the dream, you could easily have seen yourself as a cart horse, like the rainbow paint, like I am beautiful, I have access to every colour of the rainbow, I can do wonderful things, I'm magical, and that's what you see in me and maybe in my poetry, I don't know, but that's like a very right brain creative thing. But underneath that, even though no one will acknowledge it, the guy won't acknowledge it, maybe the horse doesn't acknowledge it, maybe you don't acknowledge it, is that you've been through a very, very difficult time and that working in the way that you would like to work in your totally creative brain has been a bit like dragging a cart without wheels, and not only that, but not being able to speak up for yourself because you've got an axle in your mouth.
Yeah. It's like, well, you chose to do poetry in a very academic structured environment, so there's, you know, the benefits of having, you know, to go back to the security, to have the security of doing poetry in an academic context is something that if you were outside, you know, just doing poetry, I'd have to have, you know, a job and an undertaking that had nothing to do with poetry.
Yes.
At least when you're inside university, you'll be tutoring or doing something that at least, you know, you're around students who are writing and that type of thing. So there's that sense of security that academia brings, but it also has requirements that seem to be irrelevant, you know, to what you need to do. And I should probably just mention that well, don't only have to write poetry, I have to write about a 30,000-word essay as well. So yes, you do have to write, you know, the hard academic stuff as well. And so that's what I've been sort of tackling lately, and it's been coming along a lot better since I made a decision to be a lot more structured about that, because the way that I was structuring the way I worked towards the poetry had to be different. My entire schedule, my entire day had to be different when I was working on the academic essay. So
did that begin around about the time that the Python came out of your ceiling, that different approach, that structural approach?
It sort of happened at the end of last year. So I'm in right at the end of December. That's when I started thinking, okay, my advisors, even though they know how serious I am about the task and everything, it was time to get out of the notes stage with the academic essay, and it was time to lay some drafts on them. And so I started sending through the actual drafts at the end of last year. And then, that drafting process of having proper contained chapters has been going on through the beginning of this year and is still going on now.
Okay, so that makes so much sense. And I love the way your unconscious mind is helping us out with words like contained there, because a lot of the beginning of the dream was about containing you said contain the python in waking life, contain the lizards in the dream. It's about containment. So in a sense, once you started sending in the drafts and they started responding, that's would be about the time when the python did come through the structure of your ceiling in waking life, and the dream lizards are recalling that feeling now. So it's, as you've described it so beautifully, it's all mirroring this conflict within you between, you know, the structures that I've got to go through in order to get the PhD and move on, and also then that contemplation of, if I am to be a poet outside of academia, then I'm probably going to have another job that's got nothing to do with poetry. Or, as I'm listening, I could go back to academia. Now, which will be better, to write poetry in the way that I want to write poetry and have a job that I really don't like, or to write poetry in the way that I really want to write poetry and have a job that I like a little bit more than that? In other words, to be in academia teaching the structure, etc., and going, well, it's only my second job, at least I'm free to write the poetry that I want to write. If you can overcome your fears around the calm, don't panic, potentially manipulative environment of working there. So to me, that's one thing that your dream clearly lays down your feelings, and you would definitely like to express yourself more, not just within your poetry, but within life in general, and stand up for what needs to be stood up for. Mm-hmm. In a sense, when we stand up for someone else's predicament, we're actually, when we reflect upon it, standing up for our own predicament, which may be deep down inside us as well, mm-hmm. a certain weakness that we may feel. But one of the things that, I love in your dream that you really know where you want to be with your poetry and your work. And it's like, that is good. That's a done deal. I'm going, when I finish this PhD, to write the poetry I want to write, whatever else I have to do. That's it. Tick. I can speak. I can say what I want. I think that's fantastic. You've got that. The question then is how to balance that, how for it not to be a case of the Jeep going forward without the seats bolted down. And you've got that sense of in the water at the end, that kind of, and Louise wiping the water out of her eyes, which is like crying, the emotional aspects of this and your anger around it. Why, when you're given a wonderful gift like writing poetry, presumably in the way that you do, life should support you. You should get paid for being a brilliant poet. If you're not angry about that, you should be angry about that.
Yeah.
You're not a dumb womble. You've got a wonderful thing. How do you find that way of writing authentically your poetry, of getting it out there in the way that you want, of totally mouthing it and putting it out there and also being supportive? Is one aspect, as you said, getting a job? Is one perhaps going into academia, if you can overcome the fears around that we've just discussed, which I think are shown in the dream, and regard it as just a job? Or is there another way? Is there something that none of us have thought about that we may be able to work out with a dream alchemy exercise here, where something totally magical appears to you, where you've got your poetry and you've got something else that lives because of the poetry, something that the poetry creates as a kind of wave from it that actually is able then to support what you do. Now, because we're going towards the hour, which makes the dream show a bit difficult for some people to download, we are going to have to start to rein it in. Sorry about the cart horse. Uh-huh. I didn't mean that. It came out of my mouth. No axle in there. I think one of the key things, Carmen, is to really look at the emotion of the feeling of being of the punishing journey you've been to and the cruelty, because that is the part of the dream where everybody, you get sad about it in the dream, but everybody else is going like, what do you mean? That's not, no. And the cart horse is going, no, I'm fine, really. So there's a little bit of denial there. So below that anger at the end of the dream, underneath the anger might be an incredible sense of sadness for the cruel and punishing routine that you have chosen to put yourself through. And then so to kind of look at that, explore it maybe in poetry, and then to realize that the bottom line of the dream is it's unresolved. At the end of the dream, you want to get rid of the anger, and you want to consider, really more than anything else, how am I going to journey ahead? Is it going to be in a rattly Jeep? Is it going to be in a Jeep with the seats bolted down? Is it going to be in another kind of vehicle? Is it going to take me to a new place? Is it just going to take me back home, as in the dream, to the bottom of the garden? Mm-hmm. So to kind of really explore those symbols of the dream and work out where you would like to be. Just before we do some dream alchemy, would you like to just say anything else that feels relevant at the moment?
I just really feel like the Jeep went ahead and it was rattling and all that type of thing, and it went off the road, and I had this sense of, it's never going to get fixed, and people will always go along with him. Mm. As in it doesn't need to get fixed, because people are more than willing to get back in that Jeep.
That's academia, is it?
Pardon?
Is that academia?
Maybe it may be, but the horse, I just really wanted to go back and see what the potential of that horse was, maybe I could ride that horse. Maybe if we got the cart going properly and stopped punishing the horse, we could just, you know, go on like that. That would be my way. And I wouldn't have to be with other people in.
Exactly right. Yeah. And the cart also need not even have a cart. It might not have to carry anything at all. It might have something within itself that is sufficient and abundant. It's already got all the colours.
Yes, so, and poetry, and it comes back to looking at dreams. I just think there is so much, you know, wisdom in looking at and extrapolating on the metaphors that are already presenting themselves, are already becoming conscious, that I want to use poetry like that for myself, but I really don't know how to make it my going concern. Even though I know I'm going to make it my going concern, I don't know how it's going to get there.
Yeah. Okay, I completely understand what you're saying. So one of the ways, sometimes we don't know where we're going until we look back later. You know, and so you say, I don't know where I'm going or how I'm going to get there. I just know what my ethics are, really, what my authentic self wants, but I can't tell you where that's going to take me. And sometimes in life we get to a place and we look back and say, oh, that's interesting. Hey, I'm glad I did that. I'm glad I did that. I'm glad I did that. Because if I hadn't done those three things, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing now. So sometimes you don't know what it is that gets you. You don't know where you're going until you get there.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, to move on to the dream alchemy part of it, and dream alchemy is, of course, working with some of the symbols of your dream that may have a negative or a connotation or a feeling of needing to be healed, and transforming those symbols. And what means is, at a very deep level, unconsciously, you go through that transformation, and then that the new transformed or healed understandings gradually over a week or so begin to filter up into your conscious mind, and you know what to do. So with a lot of people, you know, choose a visualization. I think you can choose, you can have a visualization, but I think as a poet, you should give yourself a day off. And it doesn't have to be good poetry, because you're the only person that's going to read it unless it becomes a draft of a future work.
Yeah.
So you do something on this horse. And you thought of keeping the cart but putting the wheels on it, and that's definitely an option. But consider also not having a cart, and maybe consider, first of all, letting it just cry away those tears, because you've already got the rainbow colours there. And I don't want to put words into your mouth, but you know, we see a rainbow when the sun shines behind raindrops.
In
a sense, it's like, if you can cry out that grief, acknowledge it. You can't move forward without acknowledging a grief, because it'll just be there and you'll fall into it in your jeep like the river. So you know, find a way in your poem about the cart horse to release those tears, see the rainbow, see the sun, however you take it. I know that sounds really crap to a good poet, but you know where I'm going with this.
No, yeah. I mean,
you have to
look at exactly the way we say things.
Yes, But take the metaphor, ride the horse, and of course in your poetry, as I know that you will, Carmen, you know, bring in and feel and express the positive emotions. So what you're going for is a sense of, you can be calm if you want to, but it's not in a manipulative way. It's not a calmness that means that structure is going to destroy your right brain creativity. You know, so have a think before you write the poem about how you can put the very best intention into riding this horse in the poem that deals with the grief and deals with the punishing cruel routine you've put yourself through, and ends with you moving forward, even though you don't know where you're going to. You don't need to think of a geographical place or a chosen goal of 10 poetry books and whatever, and a job. You just think, I am moving forward, and that is enough, because I am moving forward doing what I want to do according to my own you know, morals and ethics. I'm doing what I know that I need to do, and I know that on a day-to-day basis that will take me there. And as you write that poem and consider it to be dream alchemy, because it's working with that dream, over the next week or two, not only will that heal within you, and yes, you may go through some grief as you realize how hard you've been on yourself, but it's brought you to a wonderful place, but you may also begin to see ideas and ways in which you can either fund what you do in a way that seems better than the current options, or you may be able to see something that grows from your poetry that is actually financially supportive for you as well. We don't know. But as long as you're in contact with that horse in all the ways that you want to be, in that kind of healed, integrative way, you'll get there. How does that sound?
It sounds so completely spot on that it's just amazing. Yeah, because just believing in the reality of using poetry in a world that is so structured is something that I know I want to do and I know can be a reality, but it's like the forward momentum hasn't happened because I know that I just don't have that feeling yet. And so I agree with you that I don't have to know exactly what's going to happen, but the sense of belief and possibility needs to be generated more than it is now for me to have the energy to see the opportunities. Because I've had some friends who've had bad depression, and one of the key things that I notice about them is that they stop seeing opportunities.
Yes.
And so they stop doing things. And so even though I don't have a lot of depression in the way that they have had that, I understand that a certain type of energy needs to exist for you to be able to see the way forward, to even look,
You need to be energized. So if you further define that feeling of what that energy is, in poetic terms, doesn't need to have rational terms, and put that in the poem, then you are actually, in writing that poem and feeling that, you are, your unconscious mind will come up with those kind of solutions. We're going to have to wrap it here because we're just over the hour, and as I say, it makes the download a bit tricky for some people. But thank you so much for being a fabulous poetical guest on the show.
Oh, thank you. It's been so rewarding to talk this through. It's been fantastic.
Thank you very much, Carmen. So there you go. And of course, as soon as we stopped recording, Michael, my husband, who does the technical side, said to me, "Draft horse." It was a draft horse, the cart horse. You know, Carmen was talking about doing drafts there, her structural stuff, and the thought had occurred to me when I was listening too. So there's another little one, that cart horse going through those punishing drafts. Particularly if you're interested in words, just dreams are fantastic. And I know from those of you that email me and talk to me about your enjoyment of the Dream Show that there are a lot of you out there are involved in some kind of artistic endeavour. A lot of you are very right brain, and of course a lot of you are also therapists, psychotherapists and analysts of various kinds. So that, I think, exactly was the kind of dream that will appeal to a lot of you as well as to everyone else listening in. So enjoy, and if you'd like to be a guest on the Dream Show, it's easy to find out how. It's something that you put your hand up and volunteer to do because it's such a wonderful contribution. What we're doing with the Dream Show is building an enormous free resource that anyone anywhere in the world that has got access to the internet can listen to and learn something about their dreams and about themselves. So that's the idea. We've been doing it for I don't know how many years now, 5-6 years, something like that, and the intention is just to keep it going. And we do that with the help of wonderful guests like Carmen. Those websites again, www.dream.net.au, the blog janetheresa.com, and all roads lead from there. Have a wonderful month. Thank you for listening to yet another episode of the Dream Show, and the next one, episode 152, will come out on the 30th of May 2014. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.
The Dream Show is a production of Jane Teresa Anderson for the Lifestyle Pod Network. You can find more great podcasts like this one in the Lifestyle Pod Network section of iTunes.